You're listening to Bison Report Radio, presented by 24/7 Sports.
You guys have done a great job for Bison Nation throughout the years here. Great to be on with you.
Last time you had me on, I told you guys were the best in the business, and I really mean that. Your coverage of Bison basketball is always top-notch, and the players, the coaches, the fans, we all appreciate it.
I mean, I think you and your staff now have done an amazing job with the Bison Report. Again, I think it gives NDSU fans an outlet to go to for good football coverage, elite basketball coverage, and everything recruiting.
You know, I really appreciate you guys, Bison Report, for what you guys do for Bison football.
Here's your host and publisher of Bison Report, Ross Uglow.
What is up, Bison fans, and welcome to a jam-packed edition of the Bison Report Radio podcast brought to you by Gateway Chevrolet. I am your host and the publisher of Bison Report for 24/7 Sports, Ross Uglum, and we have a jam-packed show for you today. Joining us soon will be North Dakota State men's basketball analyst Nate Zastrow, and he will break down everything that happened in that super exciting overtime victory over San Jose State, as well as previewing tonight's game against Portland of the West Coast Conference. And then we'll bring along Jay Elson from Midcoast Sports to preview this weekend's showdown with USD, along with his good buddy and ours, Trevor Gebhardt. But before we get to that, let's take a very, very brief dive into the news. And there's not a ton of news to go around, as this is a two-show week. We've already gotten together with you good folks. No news is good news, I suppose, in the transfer portal. Not a ton going on NDSU's perspective. I mean, for right now, we don't know anything other than Peter Anderson's leaving as well. One thing, I guess, that we should probably discuss and pay at least a little bit of tribute to is, despite, you know, whatever people may feel one way or the other about the way he left, Craig Bohl retiring at Wyoming. And you know, Craig, along with Gene Taylor and Joe Chapman, I think it's difficult to, you know, obviously remove his impact to the program. It was tremendous. He was exactly what they needed as a head coach in the time that they needed him when, you know, they moved on from Coach Babich, and you know what Craig meant to the city of Fargo and the university, I think, you know, has to be mentioned. Again, people can have their opinions about the way that he left, but he did some pretty darn amazing things while he was here. One other note, another kind of thing we talked about the green and gold, or the green and the gold, excuse me, collective, and some of the efforts being made on the NIL front. And we've been told, and it seems to be going well, that the collective has a push to make it to 200 members before kickoff on Saturday. And there is a significant, I'm told it's between five and six figures. There's a significant gift that can be unlocked, not necessarily a match, but a gift that can be unlocked. If the collective gets to 200 members, and folks, all that means is that you just make a donation, whether it's a one-time donation of a couple hundred bucks, 50 bucks a month, 100 bucks a month, whatever your heart desires. And this is an NIL deal that will, you know, support NDSU's current student athletes. All 14 teams are involved on both on the men's and the women's side of the ledger. And, you know, you can call it what it is, which is it's a key for retention. And I know that that's not necessarily the way that a lot of the coaches want it framed, but it's reality. It's a big deal, you know, for the retention side of things. And I think, you know, getting to that 200 number, they're over 100, getting to that 200 member number before kickoff and unlocking that gift, I think, you know, would obviously be a major deal. All right. joining us now and on a limited time frame, which is all right, is my friend and yours, number 13 in the program, number one in your hearts, Nate Zastrow. How you doing, buddy?
We're doing good. Got a win earlier this week and looking to get one more tonight at the Shack.
How much of the how much of this San Jose State game did you get a chance to watch?
Kind of tracked it later on. I'm a big box score guy, so I mean, I was just tracking the box score, and anytime you can hold a team to 5 of 23 from the three, and they shot a crap percentage from the free throw line, but you shot 32 free throws to their 15. So you still made more than they shot. And anytime you can do that, especially at home, you're gonna have a big advantage there.
Yeah, and I think big advantage is the thing. And that's been the frustrating part, right? They had a big lead on San Jose State, had a big lead on Grand Canyon, and then again had a big lead on San Jose State. And it's like, my God, these guys can't finish. Now, I think if NDSU just shoots a 65 or a 70% from the free throw line, which there's nothing super special about that, they probably do blow out San Jose State. And I think you'd like to see that. You know, you'd like to see NDSU create a gap and then hold it. Specifically, I think beyond the frustrations, because I know fans and people in general got frustrated with their inability to make free throws. But the other thing that I've noticed, and maybe it's me paying too much attention, or it's not real, or it's just a perception, but for the last couple of years, I have felt like North Dakota State struggles to close out the first half. And that definitely happened. It definitely happened at Grand Canyon. There, you can't argue with that. And then you even look at when the Bison had a 15-point lead in the first half of this game and how late they had a 15-point lead. And then to go into halftime up six, very frustrating. You almost right now, and I don't know if it's a rotation thing, mentality thing, I don't know, just dumb luck, and that's just kind of the way the breaks are. But I'm getting to a point, Nate, where I pucker up a little bit those last 2 minutes of the first half.
Yeah, and there's a lot of coaches out there that I know really preach about how well or how they want to play well last 4 minutes of the first half and the first 4 minutes of the second half, because it just carries momentum into setting the tone for the rest of the game. So you play well at the end of the first half, that carries into halftime. And then you bring that out in the first four of the second half, and you play good those 8 minutes, you're going to have some momentum going forward, and hopefully that carries into the rest of the game. Definitely something that I think they can work on, and looks like they shot it pretty well. 17 to 32 from the free throw line with the shooters and scorers that we have, I think is a little unacceptable. But the good thing is this team's not settling for jumpers, and they're getting to the free throw line. And I think that's a big positive going forward. Just got to knock them down.
I totally agree with you. And I feel bad for Logan Campbell, because she always has to grab Dave at the end of the first half, and he's always mad because they're just not closing out their first halves. One thing, that we've kind of been subtly calling for, and I get, look, like I love Josh Streit, man. The effort that he puts forth is so obvious. Had some big plays, keeping some possessions alive. But you could just see from a skill standpoint, like there's a pretty decent size gap between he and Noah Feddersen. Like there just is, you know, and I thought that Noah really, really, really kind of threw his hat in the ring. That's a Mountain West opponent, and they had no answers for him. It didn't matter. So 17 points, and could have been more if he'd have shot free throws well. I don't think he was a super big problem defensively. Obviously, has the length to do kind of some of the things they want. I wonder if that maybe isn't Streit's role moving forward. 2 to 4 minutes, a spell here or there. If they have a 9-man rotation, he's definitely the 9th man. And, you know, I think maybe at the 5, as much as they kind of wanted to play Feddersen at the 4, I wonder if the 5 isn't just kind of a two-headed monster to try and keep some minutes off Morgs, try and keep him out of foul trouble. And that the Jeremiah Burke piece, I think, really allows you to play just Morgan and Feddersen at the 5 and you know, maybe play them 4 to 6 minutes on the floor at the same time. But I don't know, man. Those small ball lineups that get Jakari and Javis and Bowden out there, they're tough. They're tough to play offense against, regardless of the fact that Jakari and Bo and Javis can all get offensive stuff going. I don't know, man. I think we might.
And they can all defend, and they can all defend and switch 1 through 4. Yeah, Jakari can guard a 1. So those lineups, I think, are going to be good going forward. And I mean, last game, more. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but Morgan's got 4 fouls last game. So obviously, Noah had a little bit more of a chance last game.
Yeah.
And when he took it and ran with it, I mean, Dave was going to run with him. And hopefully, he keeps doing that going forward. And you know, there's going to be some moments where, you know, Noah's still a young kid, and there's going to be games where maybe he's not ready like last game and he's struggling. And then Dave still, I think, has that trust that he can throw straight in there and he's going to still do the dirty work and do what he does and still not really hurt the team.
Yeah, I just think that's if like there's a higher bar to clear than just not hurting the team, you know, and Feddersen, I mean, he won you that game. And you can't, I think, keep kind of hiding that light under a bushel. I don't think it works that way. Okay, I know you got to get going pretty quick here, Nate. Let's talk about tonight's game against Portland. They're a West Coast Conference team. That's St. Mary's. That's Gonzaga. I thought NDSU's biggest win of the season last year out of conference was definitely beating Portland at Portland without Grant. Portland had just come off of a nail biter, I think, against North Carolina, and then a win over Michigan State. They had some just crazy high major success, then hosted the Bison at home and took that L. A different team this year, some impressive wins, some kind of head scratching losses. I think NDSU's favored by two or three tonight. What challenges does Portland bring in a West Coast Conference style of basketball on obviously the return side of a home and home here?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, Portland's kind of had been on and off. You know, they opened the year and beat a team like Long Beach State, who's beaten Michigan, who's got a win against. I think they had one other big win. They did really good over the Thanksgiving break, where they lost to San Diego State by 12. They beat Iona. They beat Montana State, who's won the Big Sky the last few years. And, you know, Portland's, I mean, I think if I remember right, they had a bunch of 4 guys last year where they kind of just brought in and had some older bodies. Their leading scorer is back from last year. He averaged 15 last year. He's averaging 17 this year. It's just going to be they're going to be coming in with a lot of returning guys, and they're going to want to get revenge from last year. And don't think that they don't remember that. And NDSU just needs to play their game. And I think, you know, ultimately, I think they're the better team.
Yeah, and I tell you what, I think this is a big one, right? And I understand, you know, what you are or aren't going to count as far as, you know, these non-D1 wins, but that's a pretty tough stretch next week. I think 1-1 at Illinois State, at Southern Illinois, would be considered a massive victory. Two games in 3 nights against 2 Valley opponents. I just you might have scheduled 2 losses there. I'm not saying they can't win, but you might have scheduled 2 losses there, and then, you know, going right straight into conference play with, by the way, a little potential revenge game for Montana whittled in there on the 3rd of January. Don't forget about that now. I think this really has a chance to set them up if you're chasing 20 wins, if you're chasing, you know, kind of really a building block season, because you beat this Portland team tonight. You go to 6-4. You're going to go to 7-4 because you're going to beat Oak Hills Christian. Then that run there, if you go 2-2 at Illinois State, at Southern Illinois versus Montana and at Eastern Washington, now you're up to 9 wins. And now 11-7 in the league, or excuse me, 11-5, 11-7. It doesn't matter. However many league games it is.
I think it's 18.
Okay, so 11-7, and I think 12-6, 13-5, 14-4 is in the realm. I mean, you're really starting to look at a low 20s type potential. So I think tonight's a big deal. Nate, what are you looking for tonight? And give us a prediction, and we'll let you get the heck out of here.
Yeah, I think they just need to carry over the way they've been playing. And like we talked about a little earlier, fixing the little things that are going to be huge going forward, finishing the half. Coming out in the second half with that same amount of energy. I know you hear Dave talk a lot about, you know, you got to play the full 20 minutes, full 40 minutes each half and every game. And once this team can develop into consistently playing the way that they know how to play, not just come out of the shoot for the first 10 minutes and shoot lights out, but do it for a whole half. It'd be nice to see the team put together a full 40 minutes and then get a couple days off and you get another game to kind of work on yourselves on Sunday, and then two huge road games. I mean, Illinois State 6-3 and Southern Illinois 6-2. I mean, they're going to be pretty good Missouri Valley teams and will be good tests, but it'd be nice to get this one tonight and kind of carry that momentum going forward.
All right. Give me your prediction.
Let's go 73-70 Bison.
All right. Right on the Vegas number. Love that. Nate, thanks so much for your time, buddy. We'll let you get going here, and returning right after this, we will have Jay Elson from Midcoast Sports and Trevor Gebhardt to preview this weekend's quarterfinal matchup with South Dakota. See, almost Freudian slip there, with South Dakota, with USD, with the Yotes. All right, welcome back to Bison Report Radio, brought to you by Gateway Chevrolet. And as promised, two, as Trevor pointed out, very handsome gentlemen joining us now at this time. First, would like to introduce Midcoast Sports, Jay Elson. Jay, buddy, how are you?
I'm doing well, man. Thanks for the invite. Good to catch up with you guys.
Absolutely. And Trevor, as we always tell the people, number three in your program, number one in your hearts. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well, my friend. I'm doing even better now that I got Jay here. I can give him a hard time throughout this pod, and I can't wait.
Yeah, so for people that don't know, obviously, Trevor's wife, Carla, got her, you know, kind of first break in the media business with Midco Sports, where Jay is the king. What do they call you? What's your role there? Head man in charge? Or?
No, it's just on-air guy, more or less. That's about it.
On-air guy.
We miss Carla every day, though, man. I'm telling you.
Very humble.
They miss her more than me. I can guarantee you that. That's a fact.
Come on now. No, I don't know.
I don't think I'm selling myself short, if we're being honest.
So, Jay, what's your kind of primary role as it relates to USD during the season? And I know you work with Midco Sports, obviously, but kind of so people understand your background and sort of why you have the inside track that you do on all things Yotes.
Yeah. So we have, way back when, I don't know, I started in 2010, and I think it was 2012 when we signed our first contracts with South Dakota State and South Dakota. At that time it was divvied up. Tom Neiman took over the Jackrabbit beat and I got the Yote beat, and that's where I've been ever since, you know, handling play-by-play duties for all home broadcasts of USD Athletics that we do, which is obviously predominantly football, basketball. We've done some volleyball, done some softball at times too, but football and basketball are the big ones. So it's been really nice. You know, when I was first cracking into the media business and I was in Affiliated News, you kind of had to spread yourself way out. And I always thought it'd be really fun to have a beat and a school that I could really focus on. It just so happened that in 2012, that opportunity presented itself in the form of South Dakota. And it's just kind of been that way ever since.
Right on. All right. Okay. So I think we have to get the elephant out of the room.
I know where this is going.
I know. So, and this has picked up national steam. And I just want to get Jay, your take on it. I think you probably understand where the other two guys in this chat feel, but
yeah.
So South Dakota has the Howling Pack, right? I've got that correct. And that is maybe key donors, key alumni. I'm not sure kind of what the vibe is there.
Yeah. I think anybody, to be honest, I'm not up to speed on the entire ins and outs of it, but it's pretty much anybody can sign up and join it. I think it's predominantly alumni. I don't know that it's entirely alumni, but
sort of a booster system
kind of that way. It's what the foundation works with a lot. Okay. And they get, you know, if you sign up, then you do get, some preferential treatment or some extra,
early perks. Access to tickets.
Yes, exactly.
Rub shoulders with this person or that person, events, right. Things of that nature.
It's pretty straightforward that way. Yeah.
Exclusive gear or, you know, kind of whatever. So, that group as is now famous, I would say that group, releases a pre-sale code, for their tickets for, this upcoming game against North Dakota State. And they oh so cleverly utilize the password playoffs, and whether the password playoffs was shared by somebody or just guessed by somebody. And I don't know that anybody's necessarily gotten completely to the bottom of that. I think people are mostly just going off of the idea that it was guessed correctly by North Dakota State. Bison fans then in droves make the choice to buy these premium seats, maybe at a discounted rate. I'm not 100% sure, but or it was just early access. I don't know. But numbering, I believe, in the hundreds or maybe even thousands, NDSU fans went after these tickets that they were not supposed to have access to. Then USD responds in kind by canceling some of those ticket orders and allegedly not refunding the ticketing fees, which is, I think, a sticking point with some folks. But that story then garners national attention. Barstool Sports does a post about it. I think one of the SI outlets does a post about it. And I would say, you know, obviously we're Bison guys, but I would say from a national level, USD kind of being painted as not the winner in this situation. I think the negative light is sort of being shown upon USD. Certainly, if you look at the title of the Barstool article, that would be the case.
Yeah.
Jay, what's your perspective on the whole thing? Because you're obviously, you know, down in South Dakota. We're in Bison country, or I am at least. I mean, Trent, we're in the ecosystem, right? We're in the very pro NDSU ecosystem. So,
sure.
Give us sort of the vibe that folks are getting kind of down there.
Well, I think obviously that, you know, they're kind of circling the wagons a little bit, and you know, I think that's understandable given all the negative attention that has come out as a result of this. But it, what I was told from the USD side of things, and this is the only story that I've gotten, and it was credible enough to me. I haven't bothered getting in on this on social media. I've pretty much stayed clear of it, aside from a parody post I made this morning, related to Christmas Vacation. That was just too perfect to not throw out there. So if you get a chance, check it out. It was pretty good. But anyway, other than that, I've tried to steer clear. But the story I got was that somebody from the Bison side of things signed up for the Howling Pack. I think it's like a $500 donation or whatever. That's mm-hmm. what gets you in. I think. Sure. And as part of that, they got the early access code. And then what I was told happened from there is they then took that and posted it on a Facebook page of some sort. And boom, there we go. Right. Sure. I mean, it's makes sense. I mean, all of that seems logical. Kudos to the Bison folks for figuring that out and going for it. I have zero issue with that. That's what makes it a great fan base, you know. I mean, that they care that much, that they want to figure out how to circumvent the system. That's, you know, good for them on that. Now, everybody has their own opinion on how things were handled from that point forward. And again, trying to steer clear of it as much.
Well, I'm not going to get you in hot water either.
I honestly have a genuine level of disinterest in the whole thing. Not because I think one side is right or one side is wrong. It's just because I'm going to be there either way and I don't have to worry about a ticket. So I'm good. And if that's selfish, that's fine. I just want a really fun environment. And I don't, regardless of how all this, you know, worked out, it's going to be an amazing day. And so I guess I've kind of worried more about that. That's the story I got. It seems realistic to believe that that's how it went down. I don't know that it's factual, but that's the only version of things that I got from this side. And how USD handled it, you know, could it have been done better? I mean, yeah, I think, you know, there's a lot of things that could have been done differently, and, you know, just using a stronger password would have been a good start. But it is what it is at this point. And I think, you know, maybe what gets lost a little bit is I think just about every school would have done something along their line. I don't know if they'd have done it exactly the way they did it, but I think, you know, the goal of being the number one or the higher seeded team and getting the right to host the game,
is to have your fans at the game.
I could see you wanting to be protective of that environment. You know what I mean? So,
right.
I don't know what's right and what's wrong. I found it almost more humorous than anything. And I think, you know, the chatter, you know, just with algorithms, I was seeing all of the comments one way or another, cause I'm attached to it. So it's, you know, it's been an entertaining week to just kind of sit back and intentionally try to avoid it. Now you can say you're trying to avoid it and then go on 3 Fargo related media outlets and be asked about it 3 times. Well, that's not, yeah. You're not doing a very good job of staying away from it then, Jay, yeah. But it is what it is. You know, it's going to be fun day. There's going to be plenty of green and yellow there. Maybe not as much as there would have been, but the Bison will be there.
Absolutely. All right, Trev. Again, people kind of know what we think on the ticket thing. I don't, you know, Zach and I went in pretty hard on Monday's pod. I don't think we need to relitigate that. But what we've got here in the bottom right corner for those on video, and unfortunately for those of you on podcast, you can't see this, but we got the highlights from NDSU's homecoming loss to Aiden Bauman and the Yotes. What do you think went wrong? You know, I kind of thought it was a 24-19 final. I've said, like, look, I think if that game was 5 quarters long, NDSU wins, but it wasn't. The game is 4 quarters, and USD ran away and was able to hold on tight and got a big win in the Fargo Dome. But what do you think kind of went wrong in that one?
I think the biggest thing that occurred in that game, and I hate the term of, like, we ran out of time. That's such a JMU statement, and that's to throw slight at them, because that's exactly what they said in the national title game. That's
just
part of
catching
the game.
Strays.
Yeah, it's part of it, man. It's those are facts. I didn't say it. Their players did. But they got behind early. They got down by too many possessions. You had to kind of change the game plan of what you thought you could get or be successful with from an offensive standpoint. I mean, they won the time of possession battle. They weren't outgained. They were 50% on third down that day. So by and large, what wins, buys, and football games were hit from a metric standpoint. If you're just looking at a box score, you can't get down by 3 scores, especially against a really good defense by USD, which at the time we did not know would be as vaunted as they are. And we learned that more throughout the season went on, but you just can't get down in these type of games when you are playing a high quality opponent. That's exactly what happened. They weren't playing somebody inferior and stubbed their toe like we saw in Grand Forks. They just got down by a better team, gave up home runs early. And at that point, you're in a dogfight and you make a team believe that is probably going, okay, we got to play really well to win this game. And USD probably felt very confident early on. And they were up by 18 at half. And at that point, it's very tough to come back from a 3-possession standpoint. And they were limited on the possessions. I think USD did a phenomenal job of game planning and going, okay, we're going to make sure that the ball is not in Cam Miller's hands. They effectively took him out of the game in certain ways. Bison offense isn't on the field. They can't squeeze you out of possessions yourself. The result was the result. So I think that's really to kind of boil it down what happened.
Yeah. And, you know, I think we've talked in losses to South Dakota State, you know, different situations where even going back to some of the gnashing of teeth that happened when NDSU lost to James Madison in 2016 with Easton Stick being kind of unable to run the hurry up in like a super efficient way. This Bison team is just not built to be down 14. They don't understand what it is to quick strike and get down the field and call it at the line and go, go, go. I mean, that's not really what NDSU has kind of been about, right? They've been about getting up 14-0, getting up 17-0, limiting your possessions and kind of choking you out. And that has been, you know, stuff that we've definitely seen in the past from NDSU. I'm with you. I think they get down 14 and just stuff gets weird. Jay, we saw USD have a pretty rock solid home win there over Sacramento State. But one guy, I think I even tweeted at you or texted you or something, because I really loved the play of Shahid Barros this year. And I thought he was a snub. You know, we all have our opinions on the All Valley team and the Walter Payton Award, and that's what award season is for, right? Is debate and discussion. But I thought Shahid got a rough kind of look there. But in general, how did USD come out of that game health wise? Do you expect Barros to be able to play, or were there any other significant deals? Because to our knowledge, Matt Entz basically said in his Monday press conference, NDSU came out of that game clean. They don't expect to have anything kind of nagging.
Yeah, I think it would be a real shock to me to see Shahid out there Saturday.
Okay.
you know, he went down, it's a lower body injury. And as of Monday, they didn't have any imaging or anything like that back. But, you know, it was kind of one of those situations where it was a pass breakup on the first third down of the game. And the intended target, who was their big tight end, his name escapes me, number 16, big guy though, and ends up going down to the turf and clipping Shahid low. And you can imagine, some of the things that could result from that. So, sure. I would be really surprised to see him go. They've announced nothing officially. But that's just my personal opinion after seeing it happen. And just having some serious questions on that. Now I'll say, Caleb McKenzie came in his place and did a fine job. Dominic Reeves, another young corner, came in, did a good job, made a big pass breakup on a third down in the second half himself. So, you know, but that's been one of the strengths of this team is they haven't had a lot of catastrophic injuries this year, and that's been great. But when they have needed guys to step in, that next man up philosophy or mentality, those guys have all pretty much delivered, whether that's offense, defense, special teams, and it's a big reason why they've been able to sustain the success throughout the entire season to this point.
Jay, I want to just zoom out really quick and kind of discuss things, you know, went probably not the way that USD would have liked a year ago. And there were certainly, I know, discussions, at least publicly, about Bob Nielsen's job. And was he going to be the guy? Was he the right guy? Has the game, you know, kind of passed him by, or you know, do they need fresh blood? Was a lot of the conversation, right? Do they need some fresh ideas? They decide to run it back with Bob, and I think a number three overall seed would tell you that things went pretty damn well. And yeah. So, how close do you think they were from moving on? And also, just kind of the job that Nielsen has done this year by just sort of, hey, just steady the course.
Yeah, publicly it sounded close. Publicly, internally it was not close. I think they made that pretty evident by coming out immediately after the UNI game and saying he's our coach. That's it. Let's end this now. You know, I think it would have been, in my personal opinion, would have been really unfair. You know, he had just come off a playoff season, and there was, you know, some obviously the excitement and the heightened expectations as a result of that coming into last year. And then their schedule was absolutely brutal. You know, at the start of the season, you're playing NDSU, SDSU, and Montana all in a span of about 4 weeks. You know, the snowball kind of got away from them, and they just weren't ever able to get back in front of it. And on top of that, they had some coaching turmoil that resulted right after the Montana game that you know, forced Bob to make a change at offensive coordinator and throw himself in there and do something he hadn't done in a long time, and he chose to do it that way, and that was his thing. But I think down the stretch, you know, you and I aside, I thought you saw flashes of what the team could be with Aiden Bauman as its quarterback. There was a lot of guys coming back. It was a team that was really young and still is a team that's very young overall. They're not losing a lot of guys. And, you know, just being around the program as long as I have, I can tell you the talent level keeps growing, and it's higher than it's ever been. And we're seeing now the fruits of the labor and recruiting, just in terms of overall depth. You know, like I was talking about with the next man up thing, they've got guys they can count on and depend on when needed now. And I don't think that's always been the case, or very rarely has been the case, for them at the FCS level. So, you know, I don't think it was ever close. And I think they're being rewarded handsomely for the faith they showed in him, to keep him in place and to try it again this year. And it's the biggest turnaround in FCS, yeah, without question. And so he certainly delivered in a big way.
And I'll say too, one of those steps that was shown last year, I was at the game in Vermilion, and I think that was really one of the points where, you know, NDSU's coming off a national championship win over Montana State. Yeah, they go out to Arizona and lose, but that's a close game. It's a Pac-12 school. Definitely a game I think NDSU thought they were going to win, and their fans probably thought, well, hey, all we do is beat FBS teams. But boy, I really thought you saw kind of NDSU's mortality in that game in Vermilion, and it was like, maybe just these aren't the same old Yotes. And then obviously this year homecoming, not the same old Yotes.
Yeah. And, yeah. I mean, second time I've right. seen them win in Fargo, and it's only the third time since 1978. I mean, yeah. anytime that happens, you're like, whoa, okay, there's a lot different here. But then I think you learned even more the next week when they came back and there was no letdown against Murray State. I know it was Murray State, but
yeah.
in some seasons you would have had a classic letdown scenario there where you Watch. Go on the road, you win in Fargo, and you come home and you lay an egg on your homecoming. And
I mean, my God in heaven, look what UND did after right. beating NDSU.
Yeah,
absolutely yeah. went to Northern Iowa and laid an egg. So Trev, we kind of got to, Jay's got places to be, people to see. So we'll rev this up a little bit, but, why can, and could it go better for NDSU this time? I'll give you two quick things. Okay. For me, I think there's no more. And even I think Kava said this after the last game, which I think is dumb that this was ever involved, but we just sort of expected to beat him because it was USD. It was kind of, and that might not be word for word what he said, but it was kind of like, we were not prepared for the kind of fight that they gave us. And there's just going to be, this is a number three overall seed and it's a quarterfinal. They are not going to come into this game flat. It's just not going to happen. And there's no excuse for it happening on homecoming, but it just won't happen this time. And the second thing that I will say is the development over the course of the season, it drove me absolutely nuts, both against Raylan Sharp of Missouri State and then against Carter Bell, where NDSU was not comfortable with its corners that weren't Marcus Shepard and Jaden Price. And so they would not get out of base defense, and they kept trying to cover Carter Bell with a linebacker, and it made me want to die. Now they have become a little bit more comfortable with their nickel package. They're moving Price inside and playing him as a fifth defensive back and bringing in another outside corner. And I'm not saying Jaden Price is going to come in here and shut down Carter Bell. I just like that matchup more than Carter on a linebacker. And I think if you can, sure, Carter can have a nice game, but if he doesn't just break you, which is what he did in Fargo, I think you've got a better chance there. Like I said, we're going to kind of move it along here. Jay, I do want to ask you about, and then we'll get to Trev here in a sec, but I do want to ask you about the fact that NDSU is a touchdown favorite in this game. And I don't think it's something that's going to be lost upon people as much as, you know, I don't know if sports betting is even legal in South Dakota, but people know. People know that the Bison are a touchdown favorite. It has been, you know, publicized enough, if you will. What's kind of the vibe? I mean, again, the negative news stories about the ticket situation, touchdown underdog in your own buildings. This is a team you beat in their place already. What is the vibe down there?
I would add too, just today, learning that Bob Nielsen finished fourth in the National Coach of the Year voting, which was a surprise to me.
That's atrocious. He
shouldn't have even won the State Coach of the Year award.
Right. You're talking the guy in Brookings.
Yeah, Nielsen finished fourth behind Rogers, and I get Jimmy did a great job. I mean, he had a task to fill, but he also inherited the keys to a Porsche, in my opinion.
Just don't drive it up the road.
But then Albany and Bobby Houck, were in front of Bob as well, anyway. And I thought that was laughable, in my opinion. It's just my opinion. I don't have a vote, so it is what it is. I think, you know, these guys, in talking to them throughout the year, a lot of the conversation has been like, hey, you know, after last year, you know, we were so frustrated and we wanted better. And they've made a lot about their leadership group within that locker room and how those guys have helped rally this team together all the way back to, you know, last offseason before spring ball even. And just about how, you know, I mean, this day and age, it would have been easy for a bunch of dudes that were good players on last year's team to say, you know what, I'm not here for it. I'm going to go somewhere else and find another place where I can be more successful right now or whatever. And to their credit, a lot of guys stayed. I mean, they lost a couple like everybody, but the big pieces stayed. And, you know, they worked really hard. But at the same time, you know, they understand that there weren't a lot of people outside their bubble that were believing in them. I mean, and I thought that showed in the preseason voting when they're picked ninth. I mean, and then again, you know, when you go through the season and you earn the number three seed, and then there's social media content chatter out there talking about how they're the worst number three seed in the history of the bracket, which I thought was a little harsh. You know, and then so then coming into this, I think it's just kind of another example to them of where people just they're just not going to believe until they do. I don't know what else they have to do. I don't know if they have to win this game to finally get the credit that, you know, maybe they've earned already, or if they just have to play the Bison close because everybody expects the Bison to win, and they showed up and they played tough, but it wasn't enough or whatever. I don't know if that's the answer. I don't know what the answer is to finally get these guys over the hump, except for it goes beyond right now to me. I'm thinking about already next year, and I don't want to erase anything that we're about to see this weekend or going forward. But at the same time, I mean, how do you get that automatic respect that like North Dakota State has? You do it again, and then you do it again and again and again and again. I mean, that's the way it's just a longer process. And so I can see why people are counting this as a flash in the pan, because USD hasn't even put two playoff seasons together back to back yet. And, you know, this is the third time in 6 years under Bob Nielsen, and that's great because they'd never been there before he got there. But I think that's why it's easy still for people to discount even a team that's won 10 games, that won 7 games in the Valley, a team that won in Fargo. There's a lot of things you can point to throughout this road of a season that they've had and say, well, there's all you need right there for the respect that they should have, but it's still not coming. And I think they understand that, and they're trying to keep their heads down and go to work and try to execute what they do. And I know that people have been hard on, you know, especially on the offensive side of things. They don't put up gaudy numbers like a lot of the teams that are still left, but they're okay with that. That's what they're playing the way they want to play. And actually that game in Fargo was a perfect example. They ran 38 plays that day and that's it. But you know what? They hit a couple of home runs. They played some really good defense. They limited or almost eliminated entirely explosive plays going the other way. That's what they want to do. That's how they're built right now, because it is still a process and there's still some pieces that need to be added. But I think that's kind of it. I think they're used to that part of it. And I don't know if it will rattle them. I don't think it will, because every time I start to think like, well, maybe this will be what gets in their head. And they've been really mentally strong all the way through this year.
Sure. All right, Jay, we know you've got a hard out. I'm not going to ask you to make a prediction because you're on the radio side of things this Saturday, but give us a key matchup. And then I'm actually going to change a little bit from what we said. Tell me, if USD has won this game, what went right for the Yotes? Like, how did that play out if USD comes out on top? And then Trev and I will take it home.
They did not let the Bison run for 300 yards. You know, and so when you talk about key matchup, I'm looking at that interior defensive line. And obviously the quarterbacks didn't run as much as we've gotten used to seeing them. And Tomerik breaks out and has the huge game that he does last week. And that was good to see for North Dakota State, because it had been a while since they'd had a 100-yard rusher as a running back. But, you know, I think if they're able to limit, you know, the damage on the ground like they did in Fargo, where, you know, they, again, didn't let them break away from them and didn't get worn down, because you mentioned the game in Vermilion last year. Well, they're up at halftime. Then the Bison came out and just Hunter Lipke'd them the entire second half, and they just wore them out. And this team has the kind of depth where they could rotate some more guys and keep them a little bit more fresh, and hopefully, I think, prevent that kind of thing. Now, I will say Nick Gaze is going to play in this game. He didn't play in Fargo, didn't make the trip. He was batting a bit of a knee injury at the time, and so that's a pretty big piece on that defensive line that wasn't available the first time that will be this time. So that's the matchup I'm looking at. That offense, the NDSU offensive line against the USD defensive line. Who wins that particular battle in the trenches, or who holds up the best in that battle in the trenches? And then I think if USD is successful, they can't let the Bison play the purest form of Bison football, and that's going out and doing what they did in Montana last weekend and running for 300 yards.
Absolutely. South Dakota's own Gray Zabel going to probably have a big, big impact on how that North Dakota State offensive line rolls through the Yotes or doesn't. All right, Jay, thank you so much. We appreciate you being so generous with your time. And like I said, Trev and I are going to bring it home.
Yeah, man. Glad to catch up with you guys. Thanks for having me.
All right. See you,
good
buddy.
Good to see you, Jay.
See ya.
Okay. Trev, roll Ross. Me through some of your key matchups here and kind of how you see things playing out.
There's a lot. What I really think it boils down to is I think it goes a step even beyond what Jay had noted about, okay, Bison's front five, six, seven, however many you want to equate to that, versus USD's defensive line. I think it's going to come down to being able to get hands on guys in the second and third levels. And the guys that I'm referencing, of course, for USD are Brock Mogensen, Valley Player of the Year, and who I think is a leaguer, is number one in Miles Harden. So being able to make sure that those guys are accounted for and not wreaking havoc on your offense is going to be key and pivotal to NDSU securing a victory. And I also think it's going to come down to, because of the style of play that USD has and has found success in with this group, this could be a game whoever scores first wins. They kind of have control. You're able to dictate the chess match a little bit better just because of the style of play. I mean, USD has kind of won by running back by committee, which has been very unique from what we've seen with USD in the past. They're almost adopting what NDSU has been successful in. So I think as far as the key matchups, one, what I just noted, making sure that the playmakers on the USD defense do not make plays. And then also making sure that Aiden Bauman does not push the ball down the field and connect with guys in ways that he was able to do successfully. I know that was more in the screen game in Fargo, but make sure that he is limited in his time in the pocket. So being able to get hats on the quarterback and getting your hands on USD's best defensive weapons.
Yeah, for me, actually, Trev, I think my biggest matchup is actually on the other side of the ball. I mean, because as Jay pointed out, I don't think as much as I have reservations, concerns, you know, kind of whatever, and I don't think I'm alone in that when we talk about North Dakota State's defense, I just don't know that I don't know that South Dakota has the guns to get into like the mid-30s.
They haven't won that way.
I mean,
so, yeah, I know where your head's at, yeah.
And so if you can I will also say I know what happened in Fargo, but you just saw the Bison get to 35 against – God, that's such a cool camera angle. Again, if you're not watching this, yeah. I'm
I almost got distracted and like I did not hear what you had to say.
But
God bless Hunter Pontius.
I tell you, if just the way I see things playing out, I do not think USD will hold NDSU in the teens again. I don't. I mean, the way that they're playing, the way that they just played against a Montana State team that I think probably has a little bit more defensive talent, especially if Barros can't go. And I'm not saying USD is untalented on defense, because they're not. But I don't see NDSU, you know, not making it into the high 20s or low 30s, kind of like they did against Montana State. In fact, I think I'm going to be right in the low 30s with basically, you know, what they did score against Montana State. And so your goal then, or your route to winning for me, becomes keeping USD in the teens or 20s. And that is, okay, how do we match up against Bell? How do we stop Tice in the run game? Because and why we picked such a and we were wrong, we got aware of that, right? But why we picked such a wide margin of victory at homecoming is Bauman doesn't run, and that has been a killer for NDSU. But Bauman's lack of mobility, if they can cover and if they can stop the traditional run game, they will keep South Dakota in the teens or 20s. And I just think that they would almost have to play. They'll either have to play as well as they did defensively, or they're really going to have to roll a seven a bunch of times on offense.
Yeah. Well, I think kind of to your point, when I first saw, when I was, watching the USD game and saw them pull out a victory against Sacramento State. Aiden Bauman, he's a very capable quarterback. He's very, he's very good. And you know, the formula to beat NDSU, as far as like, you know, if you had to put a bow on it, has been a mobile quarterback, and that's just not him. It's not to knock the young man. It's just not who he is. So for me, looking at a victory would entail having like three or four sacks in the box sheet at the end of the game. So they're definitely going to need to make sure they land those type of punches, just to get him off his rhythm and make sure that they're out of sync in the pass game. Because if they do that, you know, they certainly have two capable running backs. And what is Charles Pierre, I think, is the other guy that they use in addition to Tice. They run very, very hard. So tackling is going to be paramount. You cannot let those two get loose to any stretch of the imagination. But yeah, definitely stopping the arm of Aiden Bauman and him connecting with his wideouts like he did in the screen game in Fargo will no doubt be important.
They need to keep the Travis Tice two yard run to 2 yards. You can't make contact with Travis Tice 2 yards and then have him drag you for six. And now it's second and four and it's all bad. Right. And,
yeah. He runs so hard downhill. Like you're
100%.
He's going to get those extra two. And like, you know, you have a 4 yard run turn into six or seven. That's he is phenomenal at that.
Yep. Okay. Call your shot, big dog.
So I've gone back and forth on this, and I'm probably overthinking it because I'm going to give myself a pat on the back. I've nailed probably the last 5-6 weeks of scores for North Dakota State football games. One of the things that I don't think it's talked about enough, especially when it comes to the playoffs, is experience matters. Being able to be in these environments and being used to it, it is different. Okay. I know what that's like. I don't have to rehash, you know, old history lessons here, but there is something to be said about having stepped foot into a quarterfinal game, in a semifinal game, in a national championship game, that does give you a little bit of an advantage. Now, that just is not going to ultimately determine the winner, no doubt. You got to go play the football game and let the chips fall where they may. I think having lost to USD earlier in the year probably bodes well for NDSU. It is so hard to beat a team for 8 quarters in a season. It just is. You have an extra element of motivation. You have a different makeup of a team in the Bison. I think they have found an identity in the pass game that they didn't have quite yet in the game in Fargo during homecoming. They've got that playoff experience. They seem to have that playoff mojo magic that's reminiscent of you know, kind of the early dynasty runs. And I know Zach has been very loud and proud about that. There's just an element to this that just seems like the Bison are going to keep on rolling. And I am truly, truly trying to take off my green and gold lenses for that. I am, I promise you. That being said, I do not foresee NDSU's offense getting stopped. The way they're rolling, the way they're moving weight, the way Tamarick Williams has came on last week. You, of course, got Rajah Nelson, TK Marshall can go. You got Cole and Cam. And that's not even including Eli Green yet, who has become the best weapon on the offense for NDSU, who I know you talked in the Montana State preview or recap as a leaguer. I foresee him in the same way. He's got some progression to go. He is trending in that direction. I think NDSU gets in the 30s. I do, especially if they win the coin toss and have an early possession. So I think what you're going to end up having is NDSU landing somewhere between like 32 to 34 and squeezing the life out of USD and then them getting it at about 20 to 22. So I think you're going to have about a 32 to 22 type score.
Yeah, and my score is 31-21 because that's an actual football score.
Just, you know what, Ross? To nail these things perfectly, you have to deviate from the threes and the sevens. Okay.
Fair enough. But yeah, I do have the Bison at 31-21. I think they are going to have offensive success. I don't think they're going to have 50 points of offensive success, which, by the way, is something that they have done to USD before. I don't see it happening this time.
No.
Where I think the change is, or the difference is I think they're able to win on rundowns. And then I think they are able to, like I said, have actual corners match up with the interior receiver in Carter Bell. And yeah, I'm giving USD, quote unquote, giving them 3 touchdowns. I mean, I think they do have some offensive success, but I think eventually in the fourth quarter, the life kind of gets choked out of them and they're not able to consistently win because Bauman is just not going to beat them with his feet. And I think NDSU's strategy all year long has been to play those two high safeties in a shell and kind of make you be super, super patient. And Bauman likes to sling that thing. And it went fine for him in Fargo. But when you're in cover two and you're in two man and you're in quarters and you are just middle of the field open, two high, four high, like we're just not letting you bomb us to death. A guy like Bauman can get a little impatient. And as I mentioned, you know, when you run that four high stuff, yes, all the eyes are on the quarterback, but you can also get some nifty little QB run stuff from teams that have a guy with better feet than Bauman does. And yeah, he can probably scramble. He could probably do a couple of things, but he's just not going to, he's certainly not going to do, you know, what Malott and Chambers did last week. I just don't think he'd even do like what a Gronowski might do to the Bison when they're playing. I think NDSU maybe forces a turnover here that swings things where maybe Bauman does get a little impatient, tries to force something.
It's a ball scenario.
Yeah. And in fact, I'm going to give you a name and it's going to be Wiz. And I think Wiz is going to have one. I think it's going to have a material impact on the end of the game. So I've got Bison 31, Yotes 21 with a victory there. You know what? Thanks to Nate Zastro. Thanks to Trevor Gebhardt. Thanks to our boy, Jay Elson. And thanks to all you wonderful people for listening. Have a phenomenal weekend, folks, and go Bison.